I am Yada, and this is Shattering Myths. Each weekday morning on GCN, we strive to expose and condemn the beguiling myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you listen, we'll strive to open your eyes and change your mind towards each of these things upon which most people counterproductively cling. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines. We will reveal the motivations of the perpetrators and share what you can do to protect your family while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we will engage Yahweh, that's God's one and only name, on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah, which means teaching, not law, so that God's guidance will enable us to replace religion with reason. Our telephone number, if you want to engage in this discussion, is 877-376-45. Predictably, and as we have revealed many times on this program, there are more protests now in Cairo. This time, you have protesters who began what was thought to be the Arab Spring, this revival in the Middle East among Arabs to bring in democracy to a realm that is dominated by dictators. And, of course, no one bothered to ask why the Middle East was dominated by dictators. No one bothered to ask why Arabs are 99% Muslims. No one bothered to make a connection between Islam and dictatorships. But nonetheless, throughout the Middle East, the Islamic world is rife with dictatorships. And so when a local fruit seller on a cart burned himself alive protesting his treatment and began what was thought to be this Arab Spring in Tunisia, there was great hope in the media that this would end up creating Western-style democratic governments in the Islamic world. And all who would listen at that time, I told them, and I, just as I will remind you, that there was a 0% possibility for that. That if your mind is open and if you're willing to do your homework, what you quickly learn is that the votes and polls that have been taken in the last 20 years in the Islamic world throughout the Middle East show about 2/3 of Muslims being fundamentalists, voting for the most fundamentalist Islamic candidate. You know, a great example is in the West Bank in Gaza. The last time they had a free election between the Hamas and PLO candidates. So PLO is a fundamentalist Islamic group. Hamas is the most fundamentalist Islamic group. And 70% of the votes went to Hamas. This is the nature of things. In Egypt, 75% of the votes were split between the Muslim Brotherhood and the Salaf Party that was even more fundamentalist than the Muslim Brotherhood. And so what we were going to get, and what it was obvious we were going to get, is that secular dictatorships were going to be replaced by theocracies. And that is precisely what is happening in Egypt. Police were forced to lob tear gas back at the protesters last night in Cairo, some of whom were protesting against Morsi's dictatorial claim. Others were protesting against in favor of him and against those who would oppose him. And so we're back to what occurred before he came to power. Now, this particular article, it's from CNN, concludes with the Freedom and Justice Party is an Islamic political group that has links to the Muslim Brotherhood and is the party of Mohamed Morsi. Folks, if we're going to understand any of this, we have to speak more accurately. The Freedom and Justice Party is neither for freedom nor justice, and they don't have links to the Muslim Brotherhood. They are the Muslim Brotherhood. The moment that Mubarak was gone and the Muslim Brotherhood was no longer officially banned and could officially participate in politics, the Muslim Brotherhood created a political party using the same strategy that's deployed in the West. We call, for example, an act that deprives Americans of freedom the Patriot Act. We label things like unemployment benefits. We use terms that are the antithesis of what we're actually talking about. They did as well. They want submission, which is Islam, to Allah. They want Sharia, which is the antithesis of justice. But the Freedom and Justice Party is the Muslim Brotherhood. And we have more stories on Egypt, but before we turn to them, we have Nick from Wisconsin on the line. Nick has called the program several times before. I understand you have a question about a Muslim book of cruelty. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning. Yeah, I would like to know if there's like a name for that book that I could reference to where they allow beatings and they explain how big the stick needs to be and other things. And I have a question also about that the little green book that you have on your Prophet of Doom website. Is there a Muslim name for that book? What is that?
I'm sure that there is the book is written in Farsi. The Persian language, and probably has an Arabic name as well. Let's speak of the little green book first, and then we'll go to the Muslim book of cruelty. The Grand Ayatollah, when he came back into power in Iran, and became the supreme dictator, if you will, over not only Iran, but the leading Islamic figure for Shiite Muslims. He, like popes, believed that his decisions were infallible, and so it was incumbent upon him to write a book on advice on daily Islamic behavior. And what you find is that he took all of his references from the Hadith, and there are four sources of Hadith that were compiled within 200 years of Muhammad's death, those by Muslim Bukhari, which are both organized topically, and then by Ishaq, which is the first of them, which is the Sirah, the biography of Muhammad, and then by Tabari in his Tariq, which is the history of Islam. And this is an amazing book. What the book does is tell Muslims how they can engage in pedophilia and how young the child can be. In fact, the child can be less than 2 years old. And it gives all sorts of guidance as to how to properly engage in pedophilia. The book goes on, and it, of course, justifies pedophilia because the Hadith speaks of Muhammad having sex with girls that were under 10 years old. Then it goes on to speak about bestiality, and it has chapters on the proper conductance of bestiality and choosing the animal that you're going to abuse in this way. It's just stunning. And so the Little Green Book is its name, its familial name in the places where it is held in high esteem, and they would call it the Little Green Book in whatever language they were reading it in, but it was originally written in Farsi. And it is available in its entirety at the prophetofdoom.net site. Written by the Grand Ayatollah Khomeini. As for the Muslim Book of Cruelty, there is no official book called the Muslim Book of Cruelty that dates to within 200 years of Muhammad's time, and so I view the only books being credible, the only five references that Muslims can turn to for reliable information about Islam, Allah, the Quran, and Muhammad are the five books that I mentioned to you just a moment ago, Nick. As for a book of cruelty, the Quran is an extraordinarily cruel book. The Quran depicts Allah in hell treating non-Muslims in an extraordinarily cruel way. And then as we move out of Mecca to Medina and you have the last of the surahs revealed, you have Allah depicting Muslims treating non-Muslims, particularly Jews, in an extraordinarily cruel way. But the cruelest of the books of Islam that describe Muhammad's examples, which has now become Sharia, Muhammad's words and deeds are the basis of Sharia law, are contained in those hadith, and particularly in Tabari's collection of hadith about the historical formation of Islam, and Ishaq's biography of Muhammad. And there are so many hundreds upon hundreds, if not thousands, of hadith. These are all reports from Muhammad and his companions on abuse that they fill the pages. For example, on Muhammad's farewell sermon, he devoted a significant segment of his sermon to the treatment of women. And he told men that it was appropriate for them to lock women in a closet and leave them there. He told them it was okay to beat them. He told them it was appropriate to starve them. And that he said the treatment of women should be the same as the treatment of a domesticated animal.
So there's no such book in world in Muslim language. There is the cruel book where, you know, it would just say all the things that they are allowed to do to
there's a possibility, Nick, that a Muslim has done. To the hadith, what I did to it, which is to arrange it topically and just list all of the cruel deeds and words of Muhammad. And in so doing, could have created a book on cruelty just by creating a topical arrangement of the hadith associated to sadistic behavior. When we return after the break, I'll speak specifically of those quotations so that Nick and others might understand how a book on Muslim cruelty could be comprised and be accurate. I am Yada. This is... Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We received a call from Nick in Wisconsin. Nick is still with us on the line. And he was curious about a Muslim book of cruelty that chronicles how Muslims can behave in a manner that is consistent with Allah's instructions and Muhammad's example. And so what I was going to do and what I shared with Nick before the break is that to create a Muslim book of cruelty, all you would need to do is create a topical arrangement of Quran statements and hadith statements that speak about cruelty. Here's an example. Quran 33:60. Truly, if the hypocrites stir up sedition... A hypocrite in Islam is a peaceful Muslim. Truly, if the hypocrites stir up sedition, if the agitators in the city do not desist, we shall urge you to go against them, and we shall set you over them. Then they will not be able to stay as your neighbors for any length of time. They will have a curse on them. Whenever they are found, they will be seized, and they will be slain without mercy. A fierce slaughter, murdered. A horrible murdering.
Quran says that?
That's in the Quran. Now let's go and read some more. This is from Tabari 8, 122 and Ishaq 515. The Prophet gave orders concerning Kanana to Zabar. Kanana was the leader of the of Qabar, which was a town that Muhammad terrorized. He came at it in the morning with thousands of his militants under arm. It was a farming community of Jews, and he slaughtered them. He murdered the children, enslaved the children, murdered the men, and raped the women. This guy was the leader of that community, and Muhammad said, torture him until you root out and extract what he has. So Dabar kindled a fire on Kanana's chest, twirling it with his fire stick until Kanana was near death. Then the messenger gave the order to his man, who beheaded him. Let me read some more about Islamic cruelty.
Just I have one more question, quick.
Okay. All right, go ahead and ask your question while I turn to the...
Whenever I do bring up the argument on a social network, and I refer to a Prophet of Doom website or a book, what I hear back is that sometimes it's not translated right, or that the book was written by Zionists. And surely I tell him that you're not a Zionist, and I know the guy. I can talk to him any day and every day. And but I don't have the argument to what.
Yeah, let me deal with that, and then we'll read some more about Islamic torture, because it's important for people to understand Islam. First of all, the term Zion is not a religious or a racist term. Muslims use Zionist as a racial epithet. The term Zion in Hebrew means signpost along the way. The mountain in Jerusalem is called Mount Zion because God said, whose name is Yahweh, that I'm going to put my message here so that those on the way to come to know me and to salvation might see it. So to be a Zionist would be, you'd be a messenger. Now, but as it relates to being Jewish, I'm not Jewish racially. If I was, it would be irrelevant, but I'm not. The notion that a book can be annulled or discredited because the author is of a certain race shows that the person making that argument is using what's called ad hominem, and therefore they don't have a rational argument against the book when they use a racial epithet. Now, in my case, it happens not to be true, but even if it were true, it would only reveal the fact that those making the argument have no argument. As for the passages in the book not being properly translated, there's a difference between yada yada and Introduction to God, which are books that I have written, where I actually do the translations myself. In Prophet of Doom, I did not do the translations myself. And the reason I did not do the translations myself in Prophet of Doom is I realized that if I did, the book would be discredited on that basis. Even if my translations were the best in the world, the book would be discredited on the basis of my translations. So with Prophet of Doom, with the Quran, I use the five most popular, the five most credible translations of the Quran and blended them for the translation in the book. And for the Hadith, I used the New York Sunni edition of Tabati, which is the only one that has translated into English from the most revered scholars. And for the serum. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. Our number is 877-376-45. Nick is on the line with us, and Larry has joined us. Nick had spent some time in discussions with Muslims, and when he mentions Prophet of Doom, there are two challenges that are used to try to refute it, the first of which is that it was written by a Zionist, which means that the critic has no rational means to criticize the book, to refute it, and therefore has resorted to what's called ad hominem argument, which is you attack the messenger as opposed to the message. The second challenge is equally failed. It's that the translations in Prophet of Doom are not accurate. The Quran in Prophet of Doom is translated, presented, the translations are presented from five different sources. Ahmed Ali, Pikthal, the Nobel Quran, which was translated by Mushin Khan, which is the most literal translation of the Quran and the most popular English translation of the Quran worldwide. Yusuf Ali and Shakir. Those are the five translations that I use of the Quran. They are the five most universally respected and the five most popular translations of the Quran. And in addition to that, on the Prophet of Doom site, we provide readers with what we call the parallel Qurans, or the five Qurans. We take those five translations, which are the most universally accepted in the world of Islam, all translated by Muslims, not by me, and we put them in parallel, which means beside each other. So that if you want to read Quran 2106, which is the abrogation statement, which by itself proves that the Quran and Islam are a hoax, and that Allah is a wannabe God, not actually God. If you want to read that, or you want to read Quran 533, which is the most vicious statement ever uttered by a wannabe God about crucifixion and how those who make mischief in the land are to be crucified, you can read them in each of those five translations side by side.
Is there now, any references on your website to them specific names that you just named?
So in several places. One is in the letter to the reader, which is on the second page.
I will find it if it's
okay. If you look to the letter of the reader, I explain each of the sources and how those translations came into being and how you could check the documentation of the book, because it's the best and most comprehensively documented book ever written about the five earliest Islamic sources. And so all of them I give not only in the letter to the reader, but I also provide again in a bibliography at the end of the book. But more important, and this is the place where since you're, and I'm proud of you, Nick, for investing the time doing this and for actually striving to find the information as opposed to believing religious zealots. This is a very good sign. I'm impressed with you, Nick. But it, the thing that would really
be upset with me is that I don't believe in Torah either.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm not trying to sell you anything here. I'm just glad that you have taken upon yourself the desire to learn about Islam and to and rather than just believe what people say, to do your homework. If you did the homework on the Torah, you'd come to a different conclusion, but that motivation doesn't exist with you now. Maybe one day it will. If it does someday, the book I would encourage you to read is called Introduction to God. You'll find it at introtogod.org. As it relates to the thing that I would most like you to read, though, Nick, that would help you the most in this regard, is I would like you to read the source material appendix to Prophet of Doom. If you go to the Prophet of Doom site, and you click on the book itself at the Prophet of Doom site, what you will find there is listed under sources. It's the right above bibliography on the right side of the page. Read sources, and they will tell you everything there is to know about the sources that were selected to recite and to quote in Prophet of Doom. So that would be a very valuable use of your time. What I'm going to
chime in here?
Yes, please, Larry.
Second.
Yeah.
Well, then the people that want to debate Nick here have another problem. You see, there are clerics, whether, you know, you're into Shintoism or Buddhism or whatever ism you're into, in all these religions. Yet, the only time I see fatwas issued on how to, as an example, have sex with your dead wife or how to rape a male captive,
yes,
they all happen to come out of Islam. You know, my wife was reading to me a fatwa issued over there in Iran that it was in Persian.
Yeah, in fact, your wife might even be able to come up with the name in Farsi for the little green book. If you go to the Prophet of Doom site, you check on the little green book. It was written, I'm certain, in Persian and Farsi when it first came out. So she might even be able to answer Nick's question.
Yeah, well, she's right now not in the room, but I will ask her about it. But
okay.
But what I would tell you is that I see no, you know, as outrageous as you know clerics can be and the statements they make can be, I don't see any of them issuing, you know, edicts on how to a man should rape another man, other than in Islam, of course.
Yeah,
so apparently in Islam, and these imams or mullahs, whatever you want to call them, they see it in there because they're you know that's what they use to make their laws.
Yeah, I wouldn't give Islam a complete exclusivity in things like sodomy, nor in pedophilia, nor would I give them a total exclusive in bestiality. But this is true. That if you look to articles and books, written by religious leaders, by credible people who have religious credentials, 99.9% of the books supporting sodomy and bestiality and pedophilia are going to be written by Muslims. So your point is valid. It's not exclusive, but it's kind of like today the Roman Catholic Church doesn't have an exclusive on religious acts of pedophilia, but it's darn near.
Yeah, but it doesn't come out and say, okay, we're issuing an edict where we're allowed to molest the choir boys or whatever they are, at the services.
Pretty close to
it. And then they try to cover up for it, and then they make excuses for it.
Yeah.
But they don't openly say, this is how we rape children, you know.
Yeah, what you're going to find in a future program, Larry, and you may already be aware of this, but the letter that may have been drafted by Ratzinger, but serves as the principal document in the Vatican for how to handle cases of priestly pedophilia, has an oath within it, and its primary focus is complete and utter secrecy, covering over the acts of pedophilia, which, to my sense, is actually worse than promoting them. Now, you might say,
endorsement.
Yeah, well, it's worse because what it says is we know that pedophilia is wrong. Like in Islam, pedophilia is not wrong. Muhammad did it. What Muhammad did is the example Muslims are supposed to follow. So in Islam, pedophilia is not wrong, and therefore they can promote it. I think it's worse when you're not so skewed by a disgusting religion like Islam, where you know that pedophilia is wrong, and yet you institutionally try to cover it up to protect the institution as opposed to the victim.
With some deceptive oath. There's one other thing I want to throw in, too. Now,
yes.
What you might add is that, you know, Craig at one time was a pretty religious guy.
And, yeah, it was.
Because Craig came to understand the corruptions that are out there, and because he was able to do translations, it led him into translating the Hebrew scriptures and trying to translate what they call a New Testament, which were really witness writings, which led him to leave his own religion. You see, and not join another one. He just walked away from religion because he realized that the Hebrew scriptures were completely anti-religion, even though, you know, through misquotes and what they call snippet gathering and copy edits, they've tried to make it look like the creator of the universe was behind religion, when in fact it's the most anti-religious material that I know of ever written on the planet. And so Craig, not being a hypocrite, actually walked out of his own religion. And you might point that out to these people, too. I mean, it's not like he's sitting there condoning Judaism, Judeanity, Christianity, or any other entity.
Yeah,
it's
true.
Promoting what is written that is rational and makes sense. And I'll shut up right there.
Yeah. Nick, one of the things that you can also use as a tool is that at the Prophet of Doom site, at the top of the page in the header, we have on the second link from the left is called feedback. And if you click on feedback, you'll find the first some probably 5,000 to 10,000 letters we received from Muslims. We no longer keep it current because it's just too much work, and we don't get any. Nobody says anything different than what has already been said. But the first 5,000 to 10,000 letters and my responses to them from Muslims are featured there. And they are all organized by categories. Muslims threatening, which is why I use the name Yada on this program, as I've received 1,000 death threats for having written Prophet of Doom. Muslim challenges, and that would be the place where you would find Muslims saying you did not translate this accurately. And every single challenge to translation, I have meticulously responded to, and have I kept track for a while, and it was something in the range of 900 challenges that the Muslim said this is the way it should be, and I proved that the way it was translated in Prophet of Doom was more accurate, and it was 900 to 0. And overall, in those 5,000 to 10,000 challenges that were put to Prophet of Doom by Muslims, other than something like I listed a verse as Quran, 3:107 as opposed to 108, which is a typo. Other than a handful of meaningless errors like that, there wasn't a single challenge of the some thousands of them that was accurate. Not one. When we return
I'll hang up and listen to you.
Okay. Thank you, Nick, and we'll be back to Shattering Mists after the break. Shattering Mists. I'm your host, Yana. I promised that I was going to share some of the cruelty passages that can be found in the Quran and Hadith so that Nick and others might understand how a Muslim book of cruelty could be comprised of the earliest Islamic texts. This is from Quran 533. The punishment for those who wage war against Allah and His Prophet and make mischief in the land is to murder them, to crucify them, or to cut off a hand and foot on opposite sides. Their doom is dreadful. They will not escape the fire, suffering constantly. How about this? When the sacred and forbidden months for fighting are past, fight and kill the disbelievers. Whenever you find them, take them captive, torture them, and lie in wait and ambush them using every stratagem of war. That was Quran 9:5. From Ishaq, page 550. The Muslims met them with their swords. They cut through many arms and skulls. Only confused cries and groans could be heard over our battle roars and snarling. How about Ishaq 595? The apostle said, get him away from me and then cut off his tongue. Ishaq 316. Following Badr, Muhammad sent a number of raiders with orders to capture sons of the Meccans and burn them alive. Quran 812. Your Lord inspired the angels with the message, I will terrorize the unbelievers. Therefore, smite them on their necks and on every joint and incapacitate them. Strike off their heads and cut off each of their fingers and toes. Cruel enough for you? How about Tabati volume 7 and Ishaq 387 both have the same hadith? When Muhammad saw Hamza, he said, if Allah gives me victory over the Quraysh at any time, I shall mutilate 30 of their men. When the Muslims saw the rage of the Prophet, they said, by Allah, if we are victorious over them, we shall mutilate them in a way in which no Arab has ever mutilated another body. How about Stavati 8, page, this is the 8th volume, page 96. A raiding party led by Zayed. Zayed was Muhammad's most effective terrorist. Set out against in Ramadan. During it, suffered a cruel death. Zayed tied, this is now this woman, who is an elderly woman. Zayed tied her legs with rope and then tied her between two camels until they split her in two. She was a very old woman. Then they brought daughter and Abdallah to the messenger. Daughter belonged to Salama, which means that she had already been claimed as his sex slave because he had captured her. Muhammad asked Salama for her, and Salama gave her to him. In other words, the Islamic terrorist not only murdered this woman's mother by tying her legs and arms between camels. Actually, I think he tied, but it says both legs between two different camels and literally ripped her in two. With her daughter watching, Muhammad then asked for control over the daughter so he could rape her. Is that cruel enough for you, Larry?
Yeah, it is. How about this one? This is Ishaq 676, you know, where he likes to, he tells anybody that anyone criticizing the prophet, which is, of course, him, they need to be killed.
Yeah.
And he says, you obey a stranger who encourages you to murder for booty. This is what this, her name was, Asma Bint Marwan.
Mm-hmm.
She was a journalist.
Right.
She said, you greedy men, is there no honor among you? Upon hearing these lines, Muhammad said, will no one rid me of this woman? And Umar, a zealous Muslim, decided to execute the prophet's wishes. That very night, he crept into the writer's home while she lay sleeping, surrounded by her young children. There was one at her breast. Umar removed the suckling babe and then plunged his sword into the poet. The next morning in the mosque, Muhammad, who was aware of the assassination, said, you have helped Allah and his apostle. Umar said, she had five sons. Should I feel guilty? No, the prophet answered. Killing her was as meaningless as two goats butting heads.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. And that's why Muslims go off today and kill those who would speak against Muhammad. It is Muhammad's example that they are following, and the Quran orders Muslims to do what he did. And therein is the best understanding I can provide of why Islam is so bad.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of young